Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 331 of the Roguecast, recorded May 4th, 2021. Dave, proud supporter of Tepid Air.
Y'all can't hear it, y'all can't feel it, but the sweet sound and feel of air conditioning in the office is coming.
They might even be able to, like, hear some sort of low background rumble or feedback. You know how this audio equipment works, Randy.
I'm pretty sure our little blue snowball microphone is not picking up sophisticated changes in the air pressure.
You know, what's weird, by the way, I'm sensitive to the cooler, and I don't love the AC when we're in, like, a little enclosed space like this. I hear it going on up there. I actually don't feel the cool air yet. I think it may just be air right now.
Well, I felt a little
cool. Oh, no, I feel cool. You're just in a kind of area where you're not getting hit.
Then I need to sit here all the time because this is perfect for me.
We found the Dave space that's warm and right. Full of tepid air.
It is actually, I don't mind if the temperature drops a bit. I don't like being struck with the air.
Dave, proud supporter of tepid air, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
By the way, this ties into our weird food thing, where if I get my food to go, I need it as hot and fresh as possible. This last year has been hell because I do not like to go food. I like to get my food so hot that it burns my mouth.
You know, you should drive around in your car when you get that with one of those insulated bags. I have one that fits pizza, and it actually really works.
Okay.
You should probably do that, Randy.
But I'm saying, Dave doesn't mind his food being a little colder and tepid as long as he gets to eat it in an isolated way where you don't have to eat, like, surrounded by random strangers.
Right. Which is to say, I like to actually have a lunch and not, like, eat on the clock or something.
I will eat hot food surrounded by strangers barking at me.
Yeah, no. It completely ruins the experience
for
me.
You will eat tepid food as long as there's
strangers
no
bark at you? What?
Strangers barking at me.
I do like hot food, you know. I don't know if you're aware of this.
No, Dave, you're the person at the restaurant who sends it back and is like, it's too hot.
I
was not aware of that paradigm, but...
I believe, Dave, you know the rules here. We're on a binary system.
Oh, right.
You either love hot food so hot it burns your mouth off.
Or like it when it's still frozen.
Or like it when it's still frozen.
You just eat your microwave meals frozen.
In between.
Risky business style.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You chomp. It gets a good crunch that way.
Crunch.
Icy crunch.
Well, that's a strange way to start things.
These people want to hear about comics and movies and things.
You think people aren't listening for this? This is what they listen for.
They're tuning out right now.
Do you think Jerry and Russell are tuning out right
We've
now?
We've lost... at this point, we've lost 3 of our 10 people already.
We lost 50% of our audience,
yes,
5 people.
That's right.
At some point, we need everyone who actually listens to tell us they listen so we know how many the audience actually
I think
is.
I know 4 of them.
All right, good. So that's probably half the audience, Nick.
Jerry Russell and I think Dan listens to us.
Okay,
all right.
We're going to start naming people until they feel like they have to say something.
Of course.
What does this name mean? We didn't know.
You're all formal friends of the store.
That's right. It's true. We definitely have more friends in the store than we have listeners to the podcast. We should require.
Oh, well, yeah.
Require if you want to be a friend of the store, you have to listen to the podcast.
That's right.
Doesn't matter how much money you spend.
Doesn't matter how many good conversations. Your name mentioned live on the
air. I know
the
another one. There's Clint. I know he listens to
all right,
our podcast
okay.
as well.
Oh. So welcome to all those people.
Yes.
And to the people who we don't know by name yet.
A personal hug to each and every one of you.
Yep. A tepid hug. So, store news, in addition to the quick rundown of games, I actually have store news again.
Because the store is a little bit more open-y and doing things-y?
Ish.
We're getting there.
So we did officially take off the 12-person...
maximum in the store, which we don't hit too often anyway. The store, the way traffic flows through us, we don't get packed very often.
Right. Technically, that's not been a law for like 8 months, but we sort of enforced it.
Yeah,
just...
And it's gotten to the point where we have enough people masked and vaccinated, we haven't had any problems, so we are allowing people, if we have a busier day, to have a busier day.
Yep.
Part of that is in service to acknowledging reality that people are going to start going out a little bit more.
Yep.
We are still asking for masking and social distancing. But we are going to be doing, we're going to do a pre-release for Magic, for the Forgotten Realms set, which I think is going to be kind of a big, exciting, it's their first D&D-related set.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But what we're going to do is an after-hours pre-release. We're going to do it from 7 to 10 on Friday, July 9th.
Rogues Gallery after dark.
And Anna and I are both going to run it and play in it.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how that works.
Bunch of magic nerds.
Yep. And we will have room for up to 36 people to come in. You pay $30, you get a pre-release pack, access to Land Station, and we're going to do some kind of cool... don't know. We're figure out something to raffle for prizes. Maybe we'll get a Drist action figure or something.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be pretty cool.
Or we'll have somebody paint up beholders. I don't know.
Drizzit.
Something. But that's going to happen on Friday, July 9th. So if you're a magic person or no magic people, tell them to sign up. We are going to do, it's like I say, after hours lock-in event kind of thing.
So I'm curious.
Yep.
The D&D magic set, are like the creatures going to be like D&D creatures?
I think so.
Yeah, like,
so
like there's going to be like a beholder card? Yeah.
I'm hoping.
If they miss a shot at a beholder, there's a beholder crime lord of Waterdeep.
Yeah.
If they don't Xanatar. Have Xanatar?
Xanatar.
If they don't have him in it, then it feels like a missed opportunity.
What are they even doing? Yep.
Or an owlbear or a displacer beast. These yeah. should all be things.
Yeah.
Yep.
I bet there'll be an Elminster Planeswalker card.
I want Neo Atyug or I Riot.
I bet there's a Dritzed. He's going to be like a Planeswalker. Sure.
There'll be multiple Dritzed, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It'll be interesting. We don't know too much about it yet because Modern Masters still hasn't come out, and they usually don't promote one setting until right. after the other set is out. So we'll start seeing promotion probably in late May, early June. And then Free Comic Book Day is coming. It's coming Saturday, August 14th. It's a good selection of stuff.
As opposed to the usual first weekend in May.
Right. This year they gave us a little extra time.
It's good.
What we're going to do, we're still figuring out. We'll probably do, if you have kids, they're about to open up the vaccine for ages 12 to 15, so we're getting to there. But if you have young kids, and we do want free company to be all ages friendly, we'll be doing some kind of drive-through curbside thing from like 2 to 5 where you can schedule a time to come in and pick up like 3 or 4 random comics. We won't be able to like curate a selection for you, unfortunately, but we're hoping to be able to do that. We're going to space out. We're going to put out a fresh stack of comics at like noon so that everybody doesn't have to be right at 10. Try to alleviate the crowding a little bit.
Yeah.
And we'll be asking for masks and distancing and all that kind of stuff. But we're gonna give it a shot and try to do it as safe as possible. We'll have more info on that as we go on. And we are open to ideas. If people have ideas as to how to do this as safe as possible in a not entirely over-pandemic.
Yes.
Thanks anti-vaxxers. We will definitely be open to suggestions. Finally, inventory sale hits its final month this month.
So this week.
What remains, yeah. Right,
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So we have a new sales point.
Yep, so the table that is left back there is graphic novels and board games on there. 75% off. You get them for basically nothing.
Yep. I myself indulged and picked up the remainder of James Tinian's detective run. Yep. And he had the cool team with Batwoman and who else was in there? Robin, Spoiler, Clayface.
Oh.
Was Katana in there? I mean, there was like I thought there might have been one of the outsiders.
I think Black Lightning was in there.
Maybe so.
Was it Cassandra?
Cassandra was in there.
I had like I think I may actually own the first two trades, so I was able to zoom in and pick up the remainder. And man, Tinian's tearing it up on a lot of comics these days, including the main Batman book. But that's just a random example. There's still a bunch of other good stuff back there. A
lot of Valiant.
Like at 75% off, you're gonna walk in and you're gonna get for a few bucks. A graphic novel. You can't go too wrong with it.
Yep.
Even if you're just getting something for the art. You know what I saw back there? The hardcover of Sleeper.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Ed Brubaker's super awesome.
Which we all
undercover
loved.
In the super villain mob thing. And I think maybe the graphic novel of Point Blank, his grifter centric Wildstorm comic that was a prequel to that. Super great stuff. Why aren't you picking it up, people? Don't make me come to your house.
We all have it already, so somebody should buy it.
Yeah, I paid full price. You might as well get it for 75% off and laugh at me.
Or Dave's going to come to your house.
Yeah. Those are your two options. Buy it at 75% off and laugh at me for having paid full price.
Right?
Or I come to your house and terrorize you.
No, Dave will come to your house and explain the plot of it to you through the window.
And then the grifter's like real scared looking, and this guy's like shooting past him. And
3 a.m. you'll hear a knock on your window, and there's Dave about to tell you the story of Sleeper.
I got issue 2 ready to roll for you, man.
And if you don't like it, he's going to do something like, what was her name, Miss Misery?
Yes. Oh my god. That was a scary character.
We also got a stock in of Hit Point Press, the guys who do the Humblewood, which is the like cute animals D&D.
Yeah.
We got their hardcover back in, and we also got their starter set.
We had like these preview copies that were like, what did they send us, half a dozen or something like that? We sold all of those.
Yeah, complete. It was more than half a dozen. Yeah, it was like a full dozen.
People were ready to play little brave owlets, and that's owl, like little baby owls.
But now we have miniatures.
Yeah, they got miniatures for all of it. And also we got their D&D, these are not Humblewood specific, like their animated spell cards.
Yeah.
Which have like little lenticular fronts.
Yeah, like a little fireball that's flickering kind of thing.
It's really cool.
Yeah. And they have monster cards and equipment cards and that kind of stuff, too. So
you know, those lenticular ones and stuff like that. Somebody was in the other day. They were looking for a gift for, like, their I think it was, like, for a grandson or something like that. And didn't know all the D&D stuff they had. But I felt like they picked up a few odds and ends, like a dice bag and some other stuff that were kind of, like, little gifty things for a birthday. And I think they picked up some of those lenticular ones, too, because they are cool gifty items.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Also, next week we should have a restock. We have a stock on some new dice and dice bags and that kind of stuff. Glow of the dark dice coming in.
So, cool.
Yeah.
Well, good. Nick gets to log in dice. I know he loves it.
Why do I get to log in dice?
I don't know. I'm planning to not be there.
I'm going to come to your house, Miss Misery Stunts.
Nick's going to be outside your window logging in dice.
He spent most of the first night just setting up the computer, but once he got going...
I'll log in all the dice, but I'll come to your house and I'll throw dice at you. All night.
All right, so news. There is some news. Jeff Goldblum is going to star in a Dungeons & Dragons podcast called Dark Dice.
You know, I wonder if people had looked in the early days at his career and said, like, I wonder what trajectory he will be on, you know, when he's, like, in his 50s or whatever he's in. And then, like, if somebody had guessed, like, he will be starring in Marvel superhero movies as a sleazy cosmic entity and also doing a D&D, what is it? It's a show?
So this is a podcast.
Podcast.
Apparently it's fan funded.
Okay.
Releases monthly on all podcasting platforms, so you know I'm going to listen to it. The show is titled The Long March, launched on May 12th. He will play Elven Sorcerer Balmer. The outcome of the story is determined by rolling dice. Dark Dice's quest takes place after a failed attempt to save the world and follows the team's hunt for revenge against the other player controlled team. To complicate mystical matters, Goldblum's team is stalked by a creature known as the Silent One, a deceptive being that steals the face and voice of any creature it chooses.
Now, this sounds all serious, but this has got to be kind of goofy improvisational style, right?
I would imagine.
I think so. The show features immersive soundscapes, a diverse international cast, and an original soundtrack featuring an orchestra, over 30 medieval instruments, and a live choir singing in Infernal, Icelandic, and Elvish.
What in hell is happening?
This is amazing.
That's pretty great sounding. Goldblum, like, he had already starred in plenty of geek movies. He already had his kind of cred built up.
Did you ever watch his Disney Plus show, the Jeff Goldblum?
No, it looked fun, but I don't have time to watch the things.
Yeah.
I don't make time to watch the things, I guess I should say.
It was fun.
But it looked good. I like the trailers and stuff for it.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah,
I want to listen.
I believe the podcast already exists. Like this season is going to bring Goldblum in, but it seems like it already exists.
Oh, okay.
So Dark Dice is the name of the podcast. So
go check that out and tell us what you think.
And then DC has cast their Green Lantern for HBO Max. Their Guy Gardner, that is, and that is Finn Wittrock. Who's Finn Wittrock?
He's from something, like something notable.
Is he?
Thank you, Nick.
Is he from the Flintstones?
No,
sure he's not?
So here's what my impression was. I saw this picture of him, and I said, he looks like a kind of a handsome younger actor. Yeah. He didn't look like quite like the pug or, you know, the Guy Gardner.
He does
Gardner.
Not look like Guy Gardner
He's
at all.
From all the Ryan Murphy American Horror Story.
Okay.
He's also done, he was in La La Land, he was in Ratchet. Big sure. Short.
So all I need to know is, can he play tough guy?
Yeah, actually, I think he can. He's shown his chops on American Horror Story and the various stories that they've done each season.
He just looks like a bit of a pretty boy to be playing Guy Gardner. I don't know about this.
Yeah, I don't know about it either.
I'm skeptical.
If they had said, once upon a time, he's almost too scary. I was like that somebody, like, when he was in his, like, 30s or something like that, Tom Berenger was going to play it, I'd be like, sure. Oh, okay, I can see that. Yeah, he looks like Guy Gardner.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know. I think he can pull it off.
He's a pretty boy.
He's pretty.
HBO Max, though, does have a good track record. They gave us Harley Quinn. They gave us Doom Patrol.
And people can get changed up. I feel like almost to some degree, I think Guy Gardner like literally needs to look bulkier, and like he may get swole.
He'll go get swole.
And he's supposed to be the lead, right, of this?
Yeah, Guy Gardner is the lead, which is weird.
What?
It's amazing.
Yeah. Guy Gardner's the lead. Yeah, well, of course, Nick. This would be like them making a D-Man. The next season of Falcon Winter Soldier is Falcon Winter Soldier and D-Man.
Guy Gardner is the best Green Lantern. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Here's the thing. Is he going to be... I don't see him being that Guy Gardner in the lead. I think like he could follow some path or something that would lead him to become that. But they are not going to have a, like, I don't know, sexist, misogynist kind of jackass as the leader of the first big HBO Plus Green Lantern show.
I mean, they might. Look at Titans. They do like their adolescent version of adulthood.
Yeah, but that was like Titans led with a good guy Nightwing or Robin.
No, Robin said fuck Batman.
Yeah, but he was still Robin. They were still edgy.
They're still edgy though. They're still like
sure. Argh. It was edgelord style, but he was like true blue Robin for the most part. Like we've got to help this girl out.
What if their Guy Gardner is just like a Ben Shapiro type? He's like
oh god.
He's like ah. All these PC guys just won't let me be Green Lantern.
These PC aliens. These
PC aliens won't let me be Green Lantern. I'm going to go to Earth where I could be myself.
I think they're going to do Guy Gardner, but way of how he was when, like, in Blue Beetle. Who wrote Blue Beetle?
For the record, I believe
John Rogers.
When John Rogers was
they're testing our heat right now because I feel it warmer in here and I smell the classic burning dust smell.
Where Guy Gardner was not a complete jackass, he was actually... He had kind of a relationship with Ice.
Yeah.
He was still kind of an ass, but not like a... Like, hate...
The only thing is, like... So here's the thing. Is like, I also kind of like... I like Guy Gardner, but... And I don't want to half-ass Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
At that point, you might as well just go with Hal, who's, like, rebellious and kind of pushbacks against authority guy anyway. But if, like... If Guy Gardner isn't going to be this guy, kind of extreme example of that... But he's not Guy
Gardner,
for
I agree. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I'm skeptical, but I want to believe.
I'm in the same spot. I've certainly seen people who I'm like, I don't know about this person for this character, and they've surprised me. And so.
As we learned from just recently this Marvel trailer we're about to talk about, all you need to do is put the Marvel music in front of it, and I will immediately like it 20% better.
Randy adds 2 stars.
To a
review.
I am an absolute mark. If you put the Marvel, if you put that Marvel Studios teaser in front of anything, if you put it in front of the Snyder Cut, I'll watch the Snyder Cut.
Like, dun 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 dun.
Challenge accepted. I'll do that now.
You don't want to make the Snyder Cut longer. Even 20 seconds, you don't want to make that longer. But Marvel Studios did release a new trailer called Marvel Studios Celebrates the Movies.
Yeah.
It's basically hey, we're going back to the movie theaters. Go back to the movie theaters and watch all our cool movies.
But it's like kind of like a sort of heartfelt like tribute to kind of the, in some ways, the Marvel vision, Marvel... It's very back-patty in a lot of ways.
It is.
But it's real sincere and heartfelt. It begins with a voiceover from Stan Lee, which is that kind of the Stan in a lot of ways at his best, doing his sort of optimistic, he's like... I don't remember all the stuff he says, but it's kind of like we tell stories about heroes to learn to be better than we are, and like it's like the stand that you want.
Yep,
We're all the family.
Yeah. And then they're showing a lot of moments from sort of best of Marvel moments from the movies, including, although this made its way around in fandom, I've never seen Marvel actually use it. The very, very entertaining footage of opening night of Avengers Endgame of the crowd losing it.
When
Cap says Avengers Assemble, and when the portals appear.
Yep.
The portal scene,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
And then they gave us a little snippets of Black Widow and the Eternals, which was the first footage we've seen.
Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi, and then
some titles
and dates for movies that we did not know yet.
Yeah.
So we got Black Widow, Shang-Chi, and Eternals this year, and Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yep.
There's no footage for Spider-Man, which is kind of a bummer, but you know.
Yeah, I don't want to give that one away.
Yeah, it's not till December. Was Thor: Love and Thunder in there? Was it mentioned?
It was. Okay. They showed the title because I remember it. It had like what looked like to me like 80s rock font.
Yeah. That's February. Then Doctor Strange: The Multiverse of Madness is March. Then in July we get Black Panther: Wakanda Forever.
Yep.
Which great title for given what they're going to have to handle.
Yep.
And then Captain Marvel 2 is now The Marvels, because it is going to encompass
more of an ensemble.
Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau, and Kamala Khan.
So am I correct that Kamala Khan is going to first appear in a TV show and then she will graduate to this movie?
That is correct. We just saw the first look at her costume. Looks fantastic.
It does. Oh man, it was really amazing.
They're filming it right now, so it is supposed to hit this winter.
Let me ask, is she the first sort of notable teenage character to show up in the Marvelverse?
I mean, other than Spider-Man.
Yeah, and he was already kind of like... what was he? He's in high school,
I guess.
Like 15. Yeah, you're right, He counts for sure. I was just thinking, like, kids tend to, depending on, like... I mean, there are people who are, like, 20-year-olds, like Tom Holland, 20-something, playing a teenager.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, you cast a teenager, and then they shoot up, and they go through their growth spurt or whatever. And, like, I'm wondering, is she going to, like... But it won't be more than, like, a couple movies before she's, like, 20-something Kamala Khan.
Right.
And we will see something which we kind of don't get in the comics, which is to her kind of growing up.
That's true.
But this is something I think that's neat that they can do in the movies, and I think it's usually kind of exciting to watch the progress. Probably helps inspire the comics people sometimes who just... characters evolve more slowly if they do it all, or age more slowly, kind
of. They gave us Ant-Man Quantumania, gave that a date, and Guardians of the Galaxy 3 got a date. And then we saw the Fantastic Four logo, which we already knew they were doing it.
But it's the end of Phase 4.
Seems to indicate that it's 2023, yeah. So, interesting. Yeah.
I'm excited for all of it. I think it all looks good.
I am too. I'm super excited to see what they do. I'm really curious.
I'm weirdly excited for Eternals. I can't wait to see what Chloe Zhao.
I am exactly as unenthused as I expected to be for Eternals, but I figure they'll probably win me over with a good trailer.
Yep.
Well, Chloe Zhao, I mean, she just won an Academy Award for Nomadland.
Yeah.
Second
woman ever to win a directing Oscar.
Yep.
And now she's working on a Marvel movie, which is pretty great.
Oh, I mean, the Marvel movies...
Don't you mean corporate sellout?
I mean, movie's been done. I mean,
yeah,
been done for quite some time.
She did that before Nomadland, yeah.
This actually worked out in Marvel's favor,
yes,
because they get
they're
to
like,
really
oh,
promote.
Thanks, pandemic.
Yeah. But I think... We're talking a little bit before off mic about this, that Kevin Feige and his team, like, they have spotted talent.
Yeah.
Like, they know... They always go... Dave, you showed me an article earlier that was the... from a little while back.
It was from 2009 that was said, the headline was something like, Marvel, you know, risks all on two unknowns for a new Thor movie.
Yeah.
And it was like Tom Hiddleston and Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
They're like, these little baby-faced newcomers, who knows, maybe they'll do good.
And Chris Evans, before he was Cap, had been in a few movies, but had not, like, broken out. Like
he had not broken out.
They spotted talent, and then they elevated talent.
I think. And yeah, like Russo brothers and all the rest. Even Taika Waititi, we talked about. It's not like his film career was going nowhere.
Yep.
He was doing well, but this spiked him into recognition.
Yep. So yeah, very exciting. And for someone like me, I'm like, wow. So we're getting like four Marvel movies this year, four Marvel movies next year, four TV shows from Marvel every week. I'm good with it.
You just stop watching anything that's not a superhero thing.
Yeah, okay.
Randy can do that. He has to watch it all.
Also, yeah, I can watch that much TV in a week. So
and should probably go back and rewatch all of the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show and the Inhumans TV show.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Ooh, don't
just
do that.
A thought. Just something I want to do.
Finally, there's two Netflix things. One is that Netflix ordered the Usagi Yojimbo TV series.
Which is awesome.
Which is cool.
They're calling it something else, right? Are they calling it like Rabbit Samurai
or something? Yeah.
Which is not a bad idea. People, it's a mouthful otherwise, and they're going to be like, I ain't going to watch no foreign movie.
What character was that?
Hillbilly Man.
Okay.
but it is true.
It's a new character.
What?
It's Rabbit Samurai Yuchi. A descendant of Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh, is this another one where it's not in modern times?
It's a CGI animated series. It is...
Enthusiasm waning.
I can't tell if it's like... I don't know. The site that I'm on just gave me a bunch of ads and stuff. So.
Oh, great. You have to navigate the pop-ups.
Yeah,
so, I remember hearing about this, and I am not as enthused. If it were... I want Usagi Yojimbo. I don't care what they call it, but this does sound like it's a descendant of it in the present?
So, modern... high-tech images with classic Japanese in the far future. It's a teenage rabbit samurai. He leads a ragtag team of misfit heroes, a roguish bounty hunter, a cunning ninja, an acrobatic pickpocket, and a faithful pet lizard as he battles depth-charging moles, metal-tipped winged bats, and monsters from another dimension.
Here's the thing. He has in his comics since like the 90s at least done Space Usagi, a Star Wars-influenced version of Usagi's ancestors. That was like, but it's always been kind of a little fun side project. And, like, it's not what I would want to lead with.
So the studio did Troll Hunters, which I've heard is good. That's the part that's a CG
yeah. thing?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But they also did Fast and Furious Spy Racers, which is very much not.
Oh.
I mean, it's okay. It's not great.
This went from good news to maybe bad news.
Yeah. I'll check it out, but, like, there's so many great stories in Usagi Yojimbo. Yeah. Great cast. Like, you know, like, all the characters in that comic are super cool.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, a really well-voice cast, like, just adaptation of, like, Blind Swords Pig and Gen and...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the Grasscutter Saga. Like, I'd love to see that.
What was the big one that had all the ninjas and stuff in it and the Black Powder conspiracy? Dragon Bellows conspiracy. Yeah, like, some of that stuff. Man, that'd be so hot.
Yeah, that's going to be better than this Teenage Rabbit Future stuff.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it'll be good.
Let's burn it to the ground.
It'll be good for babies. and finally... The Sweet Tooth trailer, which adapts Jeff Lemire's Vertigo book.
About a sort of set in the real world, but a world where people have, animal-human mutations have begun, hybrids have begun to appear. Included, the lead is a antlered, like, human-deer hybrid boy in a sort of post-apocalyptic setting that has a little bit like, isn't it a little bit like The Road?
Well, it's not maybe quite that dark. There's a pandemic.
Yeah.
There's a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic that kills, basically the It kills most of humanity, but the hybrid animal and humans survive. And I think it's a mistake. Like, they start being born to, like, normal people. It's, like, a weird thing. And like,
right.
And so they kind of get blamed for the pandemic.
Right. And I know that regular folks are around because they, hunt them. Yeah. There's dangerous, predatory people. Yeah. There's also decent people.
Yeah.
But the story, as I recall in the comics, gets its start when this kid's been living, with his father in the woods for years in isolation in the post-apocalypse. His dad dies. Spoiler.
He's got to go out in the world.
He's got to go out in the world, and he's like, I don't know, 12 or something like that, or 14, I don't know. It looked a little like the show might take place or, like, show more of the fall, like his, and maybe his younger days a little bit before that.
Or maybe that's just the first episode.
It could be, yeah. They definitely got to the point where I saw people, like, hunting him in what was probably an apocalyptic type scene.
And his like, caretaker seems to be Will Forte, which is interesting. They cast him in that. It's a good trailer. It looks really pretty.
Good special effects.
I think it's coming in June. Like,
it's very soon.
The only thing that weirded me out was I thought of the kid as a little bit less chubby-cheeked than the one they showed, and more of like a gangly...
Well, that's because Jeff Lemire drew him. You can't make a kid like that.
Skinny kids in the world.
Nope.
Some of those kids on Stranger Things, those were all skinny kids, except for the one that wasn't skinny. All the rest were, though.
Yes, it's true. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, May 5th, and I guess the big thing to start with is Marvel has a couple sort of crossover things starting.
Right, right. So you got Heroes Reborn there.
So Heroes Reborn is Jason Aaron, who's been running the Avengers. It is his, like, what if instead of the Avengers, Squadron Supreme were the main heroes of the universe?
And for those who don't know, I think most of y'all probably do, but the Squadron Supreme is Marvel's analogs to the Justice League.
Yep. Yep.
They've always used them as so that they could occasionally have the equivalent of a Justice League Avengers fight or whatever without having to get DC to agree to it.
Right.
But then the Squadron Supreme has also taken on some, like, cool stories of its own where, like, in their alternate universe they've tried to create a utopia. They used it, like, in the Watchmen era. That was kind of one of the early sort of serious superhero comics. So the characters actually sometimes have a deeper pedigree than being just Marvel's Justice League.
Yeah.
In this story, though, they, for reasons which I don't know if they're explained in the first issue, but a few characters, like Blade was one of them, are, like, recognize that they're in a world where there are none of the traditional Avengers are running around. Everything is policed by the Squadron Supreme. And Blade is like, this isn't how it used to be. Something has warped reality or whatever. And this Blade, first issue is a... Well, go ahead.
No, Blade's the fish out of water character who remembers that and is kind of our point of view.
Yeah.
He has been associated with the Jason Aaron Avengers run?
Yeah, he's an Avenger in Jason Aaron's run.
I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like Blade is a guy
who... You don't like British vampires?
I feel like he's a guy who consults with the Avengers, or consults for them, or whatever, on spooky cases. But I just don't think of Blade as a guy who's just a frontline Avenger all the time. It seems weird.
It's
honestly
weird.
I feel like he's too busy hunting vampires to be spending time with these goobers.
But there's no vampires in Heroes Reborn world.
Is there not?
He says something about it. He's like, there's no vampires.
There's no Ghost Riders either.
So this is a world reshaped by the Squadron Supreme, who sometimes are a little bit like the Authority in that sense, in that they will change things up. But it's also a playground for Jason Aaron to show this alternate world where, I don't know, Dr. Doom is also becomes Dr. Juggernaut or whatever, because he gets the...
He becomes Dr. Juggernaut.
Dr. Juggernaut, because he gets the crimson thing of Sidorak.
Jason Aaron didn't do Secret Wars, right? That was Jonathan Hickman?
Right.
Okay. This feels similar to Secret Wars. It's sort of a big alternate world reshaping in the Marvel Universe kind of thing. If that's kind of your thing, you might dig it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Okay.
I thought it was fun.
Oh, and McGinnis.
And McGinnis is on the art is kind of a big thing.
Yeah.
He's been working with Jason Aaron on the other one. Like, he's been doing some of those Avengers of 10,000 BC or whatever.
Yeah, he's been there.
The other crossover, this is going to go between the Star Wars books. Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters Alpha comes out this week. It is written by Charles Soule, illustrated by Steve McNiven. Talk about a great creative team.
Soule has done a good bit of work on Star Wars comics.
Yep.
It's been pretty solid.
And this is a Boba Fett. This issue is a Boba Fett story. Basically, this takes place immediately after he has gotten Solo's carbonite frozen body. And he is like, okay, I'm going to take him to Jabba. But it's going to take some time. And... he winds up having to go to a doctor friend, and there's complications. And one of those complications, it looks like, is going to be a bunch of other bounty hunters trying to steal his bounty.
Yeah, it's funny. When you say he goes to a doctor friend, I'm like, that sounds like the worst Boba Fett story ever.
But it's great.
But yes, at the heart of it is every other bounty hunter trying to jack his carbonite.
Yeah, this is a really fun first issue, and I'm sort of excited. I've been reading the Star Wars stuff sort of off and on. Like, I've read a couple issues of the Bounty Hunter series. I've read a few issues of Dr. Aphra, a couple of Darth Vader, some of the Star Wars. I'm not a regular reader of them, but I'm definitely going to read this whole story. This starter is really good.
I feel like this is a slight change-up to Steve McNiven's normal style.
Really?
Yeah, it's a little grittier.
I've seen him do a few different styles over the years. He does seem to have a few variations on his style.
By the way, the aliens that he designs here are great. He's got a lady-sized noodles.
Yeah.
He's got a... he shows a variety of aliens being murdered by Boba Fett.
Aww.
it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
On the indie side, Image has a new book called The Good Asian, which is by former Vertigo editor Pornsak Pinochet. Pinochet?
Sure. It's a difficult name.
Pinochet Schott. It's a hard to pronounce last name.
Yeah.
But he is a former Vertigo editor, now writer. The art is by... I'm trying to look at all the names involved in this.
While you're looking it up right now, I will say the premise is sort of... It's a Chinese-American noir detective story, like, set in the 20s, 30s?
30s, 1936, I believe.
Yeah, pretty classic noir era, and told with a historical-minded perspective in mind, but also with all the traditions of a noir mystery.
The artist is Alexandre Tefenki.
Okay.
And
no one knows who that is.
This is he's a Chinese American detective who's sort of working with the cops who are kind of racist, and but he's sort of working in Chinatown, and it has got a noir mystery working. This basically feels like a sort of Chinese tinged Brubaker story.
Yeah,
I thought it was really really good. I love the character work. I love the art, and I love the mystery they're building. And it's also just a different era. Like he talks about in the text piece at the back about the Chinese Exclusion Act and Angel Island stuff. I didn't know anything about.
You know, Randy, how everybody kind of knows the Philip Marlowe Private Eye,
right?
But we don't get a lot of lens through different ethnicities.
Right.
But like, there's also some famous ones like Easy Rawlins, the one that Denzel Washington played in Devil with a Blue Dress. And so, like, I think folks who are open, and I think any detective fan should be open to just checking out some different perspectives on how that biz would work.
Yeah, this is a detective story with a different point of view than I've seen. And I thought I did the detective stuff really well. Like, if you were just a fan of like detective noir, you're going to enjoy this. But if you want something that gives you a little bit of a different point of view, you're also going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I thought this is one of my favorite things I read this week. Boom has a new book called Eve. By Victor Laval, and is the artist Jomi Young.
Sure.
And it's another beautiful artist find from Boom.
Yeah. So I read this and enjoyed it, and to me it's kind of like a YA sci-fi dystopia.
Yeah.
it's about a girl who's, I think she's 11 or 12, who's awakens from like this kind of cryo chamber where she's been like sort of living with in what she maybe like a VR world,
mm-hmm.
and only to discover that the world that she was thought she was living in. It was not the case, the real world, and that it is like a ecologically collapsed dystopia.
Right.
She is awakened by a robotic teddy bear.
Sure.
That, like it was like a robot that was like made into like the you know covered with teddy bear fluff to look like her bear because her dad wanted to something that would introduce her to this kind of dark setting and ease her into it.
It looks like a horrifying Teddy Ruxpin.
I was going to say, what kind of apocalyptic Teddy Ruxpin nightmare is this?
Yeah, it's very creepy.
It is played as, like, a little creepy, but it's actually, like, it's somewhere between cute and creepy. It's almost a little bit the way the droid is in Star Wars Rogue One.
Sure.
Because he's a little bit weird and brusque. But the tone of it is not particularly creepy. It's more, like I said, it's YA dystopia. Like, there's this sense of weight as this girl is realizing she might be sort of alone in the world other than this robot right now.
Yep, yep.
But I thought it was a pretty thoughtfully written story that seems like it's also going to be adventurous, not just like doom, doom, doom. That is the YA part of it. She's a young African-American girl. I really like the art on her. Like, it's a good design. She got a cool...
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the actual, like, that ska band Fishbone that she's got the t-shirt for, but it sort of looks like it. Anyway, this is one that I will want to kind of follow up on. I thought it was a cool little sci-fi story with really, really incredibly good art. Some of the world-building art, and it reminded me a little bit of Dave Gibbons way back when he was doing the Martha Washington series with Frank Miller,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of... kind of gritty backgrounds and stuff that he would draw for that. It's just that this one has a little robot teddy bear walking around in it.
Yeah.
What else we got?
AWA, the guys who do JMS's company, basically.
Yeah.
They have a new book called Marjorie Finnegan, Temporal Criminal by Garth Ennis and Goran Suzuka.
Yeah.
So the members of Punisher Max come back.
Yep.
I enjoyed this one. It's kind of chaotic and...
I feel like this is for the people who liked Palmiotti and Connor's like Harley Quinn.
Yeah,
it's got that sort of anarchic energy to it, like a time travel.
Want a Garth Ennis time cop kind of book,
yeah,
that's what this is.
Is she undercover in an entourage of like Egyptian slaves at the beginning?
Yes, and she's about to be buried with
to be buried with like the pharaoh or whatever, and she's kind of like, F this.
Yep. it follows two characters. One person who is a time cop, and the other one who's a person who is a time thief.
Yep,
right.
And, that opening scene is really, really funny.
There's... A few years ago, Mark Miller did his... time-traveling doofuses book.
Yeah, Time Bandit. Or no, what was that called? Was it Time...
Chronos.
Chrononauts.
Yeah. Does this have a little in common with that?
A little bit.
A little.
I know that that was like kind of a couple of doofuses, like kind of like a buddy book, and this may be more focused on her. I didn't get around to reading it, but just occurred to me there has been a few other anarchic time travel ones, plus The Man Who F'd Up Time.
Yep.
There also was one... A one-shot by Aftershock, but called Eden. That's Colin Bunn and Dalibor Telejic.
Yeah,
I really like this.
I like this too. It's a good horror one-shot.
Yeah, it's a good horror one-shot. The story is fun and inventive, kind of exactly what Colin Bunn does with most of his books.
Yep.
But also the artwork. Dalibor Telejic's artwork is just beautiful, and it's a good oversized.
What kind of horror is it?
It's sort of like
psychological, maybe a little bit. But there's a supernatural element to it.
It reminds me of like one of
any
those
swamp beasts.
There are no swamp beasts.
Boo!
It reminds me of something like a story, like in a Stephen King Night Shift kind of.
Thing. Okay, yeah.
Along those lines.
Yeah, I think that probably sounds like a good comparison.
What do they call the O. Henry tale with a twist?
Yeah, sure.
Also, I think Dalibor Telejic was another guy who worked on Punisher Max, wasn't he?
He was.
So it's all the Punisher Max people coming home to roost.
Those were some good artists.
They're great artists.
Marvel has one of their like $8 reprints that was a graphic novel and now is
it's a puffy comic.
Puffy comic. This is Thanos Quest, which leads immediately into the Infinity Gauntlet. This is the story of him
getting
chasing
the gems.
Down gems.
Oh, and I love that story.
And beating up all the Elder Champions of the Universe. Or not Champions
I actually think this is like, if you are a Thanos fan and you just want to see him being a badass,
yeah.
I actually do not think it gets any better than Thanos Quest.
No, I agree.
Is this Ron? Also,
it's Ron Lim on art, yeah. Sort of painting, and Jim Sterling writing. Also, it ends with Thanos in the chair and this sort of like,
oh, yeah,
the, that they reference the MCU.
Right, it's super iconic. Yeah. And yeah, that is something that I will readily recommend to anybody who is a Thanos fan.
Yep. Wanted to mention also that Money Shot Volume 2 comes out this week, if you've been following that in trade.
That's the story of scientists who get into making porn to fund their space endeavors.
Yes. With aliens.
It is satirical, but also progressive-minded, and in its particulars on sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like dirty and cheeky and very, very super R-rated.
Is it written or co-written by Tim Seeley?
Yes, Tim Seeley is at least involved. I don't know if he's
right,
the writer,
but he's writing it, I think, with a woman, so that you get, yeah. I think you get a little bit of the balance of the sexes kind of vibe going on.
Dave, there's another Orville this week.
Yeah, I just want to mention folks who watch the sci-fi and comedy show the Orville that they are continuing to put out good little micro series. And I was pointing out to Randy, Nick, how good the art is in this. Like, this guy is actually really good at capturing the likenesses.
Yeah.
And there's, like, really good coloring and stuff on it.
I feel like all the artists that they've gotten for the Orville have been able to really do
they
the
have.
Likeness as well.
Yeah, they picked, I think, some of the best possible people you could. And, like, there's lots of licensed shows that, honestly, I feel like the Buffy comic and something like that.
Who's writing? Is it one?
David Goodman, who I think is one of the show people.
Yeah, he's one of the show writers.
Yeah. Anyway, this one I actually did not read because, even though I've been enjoying the previous ones that they did, I forgot, I've never gotten around to finishing season two, and I know this specifically ties into the finale of it.
Oh, the finale of the season two stuff, or kind of the later season two stuff, was great in Orville.
So, yeah, I need to, it's a reminder to me to catch up on it, and then maybe I can check this out. But in any case, if you are in any stripe of fan of that show, which is a good show, I would recommend these. These feel like a complete, like they literally could be episodes of it.
Yep. Batman 108. This is the next part of James Tynion's Batman, where he continues to create interesting new characters. The newest one is Molly Millions, a sort of cyberpunk tech hacker.
I was going to say, this is Batman playing cyberpunk.
This was great, and it's got amazing artwork.
Molly seems like she's going to be a character who might be the little bit of the new tech expert, and like, you know, like how there's usually like the Tinkerer over at Marvel or Lucius Fox, you know, kind of having access to all the tech and stuff in the, like, especially in the movies, but, you know, different stripes of those characters over the years. It looks like she might be that new person.
She has a very cool look, though.
So, yeah, it was a great cyberpunk.
She basically kind of takes Batman through a, like, explaining to him the sort of living wild in Gotham and, you know, that maybe the rich are more of the problem than the street punks he's been beating up.
It is kind of meta in that sense, and might represent. I mean, we already know that they kind of broke his billionaire fortune thing. Yep. He's well off, but he's not a billionaire anymore. It sounds like they might be like really kind of moving Batman a little bit into the future.
Yep.
Also, I don't know if this. I know that not everybody's going to draw like this super cool art. But, like, if Gotham were to kind of look like this cyberpunk landscape like they're making it look, I'd be down with that.
Yeah.
I was saying, Nick, off mic earlier, the vision of how Gotham looks over the years has kind of stopped right around the Tim Burton era and Batman the Animated Series. And it's a great look, somewhere between just big city and, like, a retro 30s look, sort of, or 40s look.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's perfectly reasonable, just as you are also creating like all these new major villains and supporting characters, to update the look of the city. And I think, honestly, a cyberpunk vibe is kind of a cool vibe for Gotham.
I agree.
If they changed around the some of the toys in the sandbox a little bit, I'm perfectly down with that.
Yeah.
You can always move stuff around.
Yep, I'm for it. That's most of the stuff this week. I also want to mention that we did get the Marvel novels. These are like stuff from the early 2000s. They were a trilogy of novels, and now they put them in these sort of omnibus format.
Yeah.
There's an X-Men Avengers, there's a Spider-Man and Venom. If you're looking for, these are written by like Diane Duane, Greg Cox, people who have written some licensed novels. They're good stuff. I read them back in the day. And so we decided to give those a try. So if you, and the guy who wrote the Avengers X-Men one also just wrote the Court of Owls novel, which we also got in.
Oh, cool.
So if you're looking for a novel to get your teens maybe reading a little bit more books.
Yeah.
Those is an option to ease them into it.
Yep.
And I also, on my list, I just want to mention that the third issue of Noctera came out. I'm still loving this book.
It's Scott Snyder and Tony Daniel.
This post-apocalyptic, the world is covered in darkness that's slowly infecting everything and everyone. Turning
shadow
evil.
Beings
yeah,
skulk around in it.
But it's also got this road trip vibe as like these people are trying to reach a safe haven.
I am still planning to go back and reread some of that because like that is like that as a hook, that's like right up my alley.
Yeah, it's a really fun book.
It's the fun post-apocalyptic version of Alan Wake.
Yes.
All right, we're going to be back in just a second and we're going to talk about some TV and movies. We are going to talk about Mortal Kombat.
You said it wrong.
Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Kombat!
No, no,
it has begun!
I feel like this movie should be talked about in column result Mortal Kombat.
Damn it, you're right.
So, we were all kind of hyped this. We watched the trailer, we talked about it on the podcast.
Right, it looked like, I was like, that got some, brought some edge to it, but it still kind of was over the top. Look, he, you know, stabbed him with like a frozen icicle.
I think
that
if you rewind the tape, you may have heard me say, but it might be bad.
Yeah, it's like true.
Look at Nick, the voice of reason.
I started to get bad rumblings when people were starting to watch it. They're like, oh, this is okay. And I saw a few people who liked it, and I was like, uh oh. Yeah. And then I watched, I would say, about half of it. I think I got to the point where they introduced Kano and Liu Kang. And I was like, oh, this is boring.
Am I in the minority here that I feel like everyone loved Kano and I thought he was annoying as hell and I didn't care for him
What
at
I
all.
Saw of him annoyed the crap out of
he
me.
He was the only character in it who kind of had some energy to his performance, but it was just like him being a D-bag and it wasn't like particularly like kind of like clever. He was just like, I'm an Australian D-bag, eh?
You know, there's the
what?
Thing.
Yeah.
He would have been perfect for Captain Boomerang.
I mean, the actor might have been, but I still want better lines and stuff
than
he got.
That's true.
The dialogue was bad.
But yes, this was in fact a more serious take on it than the 95 outing, which is a fondly remembered good trashy movie for many of us.
Mm-hmm.
This is the edgier one with lots more R-rated deaths and people who drop the F-bomb, only it turns out that does not make the movie mature. Yeah. It had a super boring plot. It sort of starts out with a grabber opening.
Yeah, it's a good opening.
Showing the murder of the family of the clan that has Scorpion in it.
Yep.
He does this cool thing where like Sub-Zero comes in and he's not called Sub-Zero in this sort of feudal fantasy era.
Is he Plane Zero?
He's not Plane Zero.
Eventually. As a reference to what? Running Man?
Yeah.
Yep.
But he shows up and like murders his family and the little garden spade that his wife was digging with, like, you see him, which has, like, kind of, like, a sharp edge to it. He picks it up and, like, just coils this rope around it and ties it. And you see him make the get over here, you know, weapon thing that he has just out of, like, what was lying around. And I was like, oh, that's actually kind of neat how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty brutal opening. And then it cuts to modern times, and we follow the story of a dude who is, like, his ancestor still being hunted, even as this Mortal Kombat thing opens, is, like, approaching. And it has just as dopey a... They do no more to explain the Outworld?
Outworld.
Outworld invasion of Earth than the original did. But the original, like, kind of had campy fun, where when they said, like, you know, if Outworld wins 10 Mortal Kombats against a world, we own it and can invade. And I was like, oh, that's fun. That's so goofy how they just said it. Like, the premise of such a goofy game.
Yep.
And I was like, well, this new one, though, is going to, like, think it up and build some cool mythology around it. And they just literally said the exact same thing. Outworld has to, they're on 9 of 10, and then if they win, they get it.
They don't even have a tournament in this movie.
Yeah, there was no time to build up the coolness of Outworld, Dave, because we had to get deep into the story of Cole, whatever his name is.
Loser guy who they make out sort of like could become
Scorpion,
the new Scorpion, only he becomes some dude.
Metal-armed, bodied guy.
I've already heard the people, the screenwriters and all that are like, no, it's a trilogy where like the second one's gonna have Mortal Kombat, and I'm wondering, are they gonna do like the second one has the tournament and Cole becomes Scorpion in the second one? Like they were holding out for a sequel. Do your cool shit now because you're not gonna get there.
Yeah. Oh, they're getting there. They got greenlit for a sequel. It made money.
So this has they took away the techno.
Yeah,
they took away the fun. They took away the tournament.
Yeah, and by the way, even though I had read them say that they're going to, like, oh, yeah, we're going to have the famous Mortal Kombat music, and we're going to have the shout Mortal Kombat, it's like the music is in like some real sedate, reorchestrated version that's, yeah, like, moody and ominous and not fun.
Yep.
And I don't know if I actually ever heard anybody scream out Mortal Kombat, which was very inspired.
And most of the characters are just bland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't even exude any sort of energy. I mean,
I'm not saying that Sonya Blade in the original was a great character, but somehow the combination of her, Johnny Cage, and all the rest of them kind of goofing it up.
It's also just the actors.
What's his name? Christopher Lambert.
Yeah.
Having the time of his life as a kind of a sly trickster lightning god.
The new Raiden was boring.
Yeah, he was.
They're all boring. It's all boring.
You know, I remember hearing that those guys, a lot of these, we talked about this, a lot of them are sort of like known martial artists, cinematic martial artists. And like, I do think like the actual staging of the fights were like, they were clearly doing some good work.
Yeah.
Some good stunts and things like that. I'll definitely give them that. And like, the violence in it is pretty entertaining and over the top.
Yeah, the Kung Lao fatality, which is actually from the game, I was like, okay, that was fun.
Yeah, although it was kind of weird because he was kind of slightly zen and spiritual in this.
And then
he kills this woman in, like, this horrible way.
You know, if you've got a razor hat, you've got to use it to bisect somebody.
This is crazy. But the... yeah, the tournament, the reason it doesn't happen in the movie is because, like, Shang Tsung is like, I will, like, to make sure I don't lose it, this 10th one, I'll assassinate everybody ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's an okay premise for the first half of your movie, mm-hmm. and then the tournament happens and it's cool. But instead, it is like they're all just running around in front of, like, either their houses or yards and stuff like that, or in abandoned industrial complexes.
I thought the Sub-Zero special effects were good.
The special effects are all, I thought, pretty A-list.
They should have spent some money on scripting. That's really what it is. Like, the action's fine. Yeah. They should have maybe gone back to the well on the casting and the scripting.
Well, you know what I liked about the 95 one? Is that it has this almost sort of like, it became more of a, like, a fantasy epic, where it's like, there's like, traveling around on boats to get to the island, and, you know, this lots more sort of very big mysticism.
Yeah.
Here, there is some training at a temple that has vaguely magical vibes about it, but, like, it's kind of boring still. Who is the guy who trains them, Nick? He was, like, the lead sort of,
oh,
like...
Liu Kang.
Liu Kang, yeah, kind of like... He kind of was at the heart of the original 95 one.
Which I actually thought
here he's more
fine.
Of a supporting character as a trainer. And I'm like, yeah, that's... I liked their kind of rearrangement of the pieces. Theoretically, I would have even liked this guy who's like a nobody who finds out he's like the lineage of Scorpion.
If it was cool,
if he became Scorpion.
If he was one of the characters from Mortal Kombat. This is just some created creation that sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry. This movie was bad.
I don't sort of quite regret watching it, but I probably would never watch it again.
This is one of the silver linings of the pandemic. I didn't go pay to see this in the theater, and I absolutely would have.
Yeah, I would have too.
And I'm super glad that
they put together a good trailer. They would have tricked us.
Yep. So
I do know some people it's connected with, and I think sometimes they're the video game people who are like catching nods to this specific to the video games that I didn't, or just enjoying the it's hardcore more. But, man, do I miss the fun of all the crazy rave music in the original.
Yep.
And, like, when... Like, they would be shouting at, like, the overdubbed, like, roll call of names in the middle of the actual movie while the music is thumping.
Here's the thing. Mortal Kombat is still probably the video game movie to beat, right? Like, the original one?
As crazy as it seems, 1995... produced the best video game movie to date.
There have been some okay ones.
It was like Rampage is good.
Rampage is good.
I actually think Rampage is a potential winner.
Detective Pikachu.
But I was going to say, Detective Pikachu is better than this movie. By a mile.
Right.
By several miles.
Yep. Somewhere out there, by the way, somebody is saying Silent Hill, and I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I could see an argument for Silent Hill being good. There's some very... Like, Sean Bean is actually good in that.
I can see the argument. It's wrong. But
yeah, I mean, overall,
it's out of line, but it's not.
It's not right.
I would have no interest in a sequel, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm probably not going to watch. Unless it's free on HBO Max, I probably will not watch a sequel.
So what's next on the movie list? What's next up to disappoint us?
On HBO Max?
No, like the movies that were going to be in the theater.
Oh.
So sadly, it's the next Fast and the Furious.
Army of the Dead? Is Army of the Dead the next?
But that's Netflix. That's
No, nothing's going to theaters.
I was always braced for Army of the Dead to suck.
I'm actually bracing for it to not suck. I think it might be fun.
The Conjuring 3, maybe? I don't know. There's something coming.
Well, yeah, The Conjuring 3, I think, has a high chance, actually, of going wrong because it's the guy who directed Cursed of La Llorona.
Yeah.
The remake of it or the original?
The shitty jump scare remake.
Yeah, that one.
The one that was part of the Conjuring verse.
Yeah. Oh, right.
That's where they're like, connected. Yeah, you're. Actually, I don't know if it's part of that universe.
It is.
But it was like produced by those same people.
No, they make a reference to something in that.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
It's a good thing the Warrens aren't around to banish La Llorona.
I consciously decided not to watch the trailer for Conjuring because I just want to go in with that.
The trailer is. It looks good. Yep. Like, you would think, this could be a good movie. And it could be.
Is it still written by, what's his name?
I don't think so. I don't think Leigh-Whannell's involved.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Know. And that's, I guess that is the trick. If Leigh-Whannell's not involved, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Well, we will see. All right, let's take a quick break to bring Anna in, and then we'll talk about some more stuff. All right, Anna has joined us.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about... Because Anna's been wanting to talk about the Nevers, and we are going to talk about the Nevers, but first, we're going to talk about a thing that Anna's not watched, but neither did Dave.
Yeah.
But Nick and I both did, and everybody should, and that is Mitchell's vs. the Machines on Netflix.
Yes.
So this is, it's produced by Lord Miller.
Yeah.
Who did Lego Movie and Spider-Verse and all that kind of stuff, and it's Sony Animation, but it's actually directed by somebody else.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that my wife got DMs from a couple of her coworkers and it's like, you should watch this immediately.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, we should watch this. Because I remember making you guys watch the trailer for it a while back and guys were like...
It had a different name. It was named something else, right?
I thought
it had a different name originally.
But you and Dave were like, meh, it looks okay.
Okay, so the guy who is writing, he is the cartoonist, director, and writer. He worked on Gravity Falls as creative director and writer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then the co-director also worked on Gravity Falls and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And so Disenchantment.
That's like a really excellent creative pedigree, actually.
So those are the people who did Mitchell's vs. the Machines, which, by the way, is... The pitch for this is it starts at the robot apocalypse has happened.
Yep.
Okay.
Basically, this guy made smartphones that could walk around and they rebel.
Mistake.
Yeah.
And the only people who can say humanity's being gathered out to be shot into space by these robots.
Yep.
And the only people who can save them is this quirky dysfunctional family that was on a road trip to take the kid to California for film school.
Yes.
It's delightful. And the funny thing is, like, the kid, I watched it with my kid, my teenager, who usually doesn't sit and watch, they're both teenagers, I guess, my older teenager, who does not sit and watch stuff with me, but I turned it on, they were sitting there, and the kid's name is Katie, which my kid was like, what? Because they were originally born Katie, and they made a note of that.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't have said anything, but they did. And then the little brother is named Aaron, which is my son's name.
That's
and we were
hilarious.
we were like, what? And it was a little weird, basically, to be watching this like story of, oh, the kid's going away to college, which my kid is going away in later this year. And so that connected with me. And then they threw in all the robot stuff. But the voice cast, Abby Jacobson from Broad City plays Katie Mitchell.
Danny McBride.
Is the dad. Maya Rudolph is the mom.
Yep.
And the kid is Mike Rionda, who is the creator of the show.
And then
Eric Andre plays their Steve Jobs type, basically.
Olivia Colman is Olivia Steve Jobs' creation.
Yes. And then Fred Armisen and Beck Bennett play two robots who... get short-circuited and then become...
Part of the family.
That's delightful.
I love Beck Bennett. He is amazing
in
this.
This was so much fun.
Yeah.
It's hard to... It's one of these things where you look at the trailer and you may not think, you're like, well, it looks fun enough. But no, it's just like Sony when they elevate something.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Spider-Verse was just perfect. And Lego Movie is like, this should never have worked as well as it did. This is like that.
Yeah, honestly, this is... If I had to choose between this and Soul, Which was fantastic.
Yeah.
I feel like I might choose this one just because the heart and humor and...
Interesting.
I really love the animation style because it blends a couple of things in there. And there's a lovely dog in this.
Yeah, so...
A family dog.
Katie makes, like... She makes little movies with their weird-looking pug dog.
Dog cop.
And, and so we see some of her, like, her fan-made movie things. And she's an animator. And so, like, they do some stuff like that. And it's a lot of fun. And it's very inventive. It's beautiful.
That's delightful.
Yeah, and it's... Laugh out loud funny.
Oh,
like,
completely.
I cracked up several times at this.
Yeah, I laughed louder at this than I have at pretty much anything lately.
This was the best movie I've seen this year.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, not even close.
Yeah, like, agreed.
I mean, I guess technically this year only feels like it's way longer than it is.
Right.
But you do watch a lot of movies, so that's
watched,
a lot more impressive than
I've
if I were to say that.
20 new movies this year.
What
this
the
is
hell,
by far the top of them.
I don't know how many I've watched. I've watched several, but this is still, this is definitely at the top.
Okay. Yeah, it's fantastic. Everyone should watch it.
I will give it a shot. You had me at the robots are shooting humans into space.
Yes, yeah.
So the rest of the pitch was completely lost on me because I was sitting here thinking, this is why I always thank my Google.
The thing that weirds me out is that Danny McBride is an actor I don't usually like.
No, me neither, but he's great here.
But he's great as this sort of... not blundering dad, but kind of...
It's weird. It's almost like the Ron Swanson. Like, he's the guy who's the outdoorsman, and his rest of his family is, like, all on phones, and they're making weird movies, and the kid's obsessed with dinosaurs, and...
Yeah.
Like, he's just in the wrong family, basically.
The kid obsessed with dinosaurs, and his relationship with the neighbor girl, it's amazing.
By the way, their neighbors who are played as, like, they're these perfect neighbors that they can't live up to, these Instagram perfect neighbors. Chrissy Teigen and John Legend.
Yeah.
Oh, that's delightful.
So
weird.
Yeah. This was super fun. I think everybody should watch this.
Yeah. Okay. Agreed.
We're going to talk about HBO Max's The Nevers, Joss Whedon's new show.
Yeah. Don't hold it against it.
Yeah. It is, though. It's like he wrote and directed and...
Slowly but surely, you're seeing his name pushed onto the credits a little bit less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still there, and then all the other people...
A lot of
the
Buffy people, Doug Petrie
Jane Espenson.
Jane Espenson are on this.
Similarly, the episodes that I've liked the most haven't even been, like, written by him. They're just directed by him.
Yeah.
And... I will admit, I'm not, like, a huge Joss Whedon fan, and I'm definitely not a Joss Whedon fan now that I know how the sausage is made.
Right.
Or the jossage. Now that I know how the jossage is made. Not a big Joss Whedon fan. But this, it's not overly Whedon-y.
Right.
It sort of has, like, a very comic book influence. Like, you can tell that, like, Joss Whedon really wished he was doing an X-Men show.
This is just Victorian X-Men,
it is.
Right?
Or Victorian Doom Patrol, as the second episode made me think a lot more. But I don't know, sort of, at first I was thinking, like, this is just gonna be the bit. Like, and full disclosure, I really want, like, an X-Men show like this.
Yeah.
So this, like, hit that spot for me. But when they sort of, like, started making things a little more complicated, like, revealing that the characters are weirder, or that their powers have certain drawbacks that are, like, bad for them, or that their wheelchair-bound patron who is funding their entire orphanage/school for gifted people is actually an evil scientist.
See, to me, I'm like, we've had that reveal. Like, they did that in Doom Patrol, too, where, like,
yes,
Miles Calder's evil.
But I love Doom Patrol, so this isn't a downside to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's doing anything new, but I think in execution it's doing it well.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think it's my issue. It's like, I've seen all of this done before. The only thing it's new is, like, the Victorian trappings.
Yeah.
But it is a well-executed superhero team
and I know,
story.
Yeah. I know you're not very much into the Victorian kind of stuff.
I am actively not.
Yeah.
Well, think about it like this, though. It is technically Victorian era, but during this time period in the world, there's a lot more interesting stuff going on. You have, like, the Wild West in America, and you also have the end of the samurai in Japan.
That's true.
Technically, there are a lot of really cool aesthetics that they could explore with this.
That's true. If they go that route, I would be interested in seeing. I definitely want a change-up as they go on. Like, I want either for this to move, the timeline to move forward, Or, yeah, to go to the Wild West or bring in the samurai stuff.
Well, if it follows X-Men trappings, there will be alternate timelines.
And Mojo.
And Mojo versus and Sentinels.
Victorian Sentinels.
Victorian Sentinels, obviously.
Steam-powered Sentinels.
Well, the League of White Men who are out to get all the people.
Oh, yeah.
I will definitely create Sentinels. I mean,
yeah,
they're evil.
They're really bad and terrible.
I like their lead character, Mrs. True.
Oh,
I
love
great.
Her. She's,
yeah.
she's like, she's kind of their Cyclops.
Yeah.
And she's like really good at it too.
If Cyclops could kick butt.
Yeah. I mean, right down to like all of the weird relationship drama and faux cheating. She's just Cyclops.
Yeah, that's true.
But I also like, is it just me? Is this show really homoerotic?
No, there's definitely a lot of that. And
yeah.
He even always brought that to his show.
He did.
Too.
Yeah. But one thing that I do like that this does really, really well that even X-Men fails to do a lot of the time is the sort of, like, intersectional, like, struggle, whereas, like, in a lot of the Marvel comics and a lot of the X-Men stuff, like, very rarely is it, like, I am Storm, and I have trouble with the world because I am a mutant, and also because I am black.
Right.
Or, like, my passing privilege as a mutant is way worse, or rather, is way less, like, bad for me personally
yeah.
than, say, like, someone in the Morlocks,
right.
who is, like,
yeah.
actually very bad. But, like, the witch doctor, or the guy who made the joke about being a witch doctor.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
like, if somebody saw me, a black guy, with the ability to magically heal people with my hands, they would kill me for being a voodoo practitioner.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, that's good. It's like really interesting to see that sort of like picked up on.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Similarly, like a lot of the stuff with the like, oh, this is like a women's plague,
mm-hmm.
which is really fascinating to sort of see drawn on in the show.
Yeah.
And I think it does add an extra layer of complexity that isn't in other superhero type things of this nature. So while I will say that they're not really inventing the wheel as far as genre trappings go,
right?
Like that is at least one thing that has the potential to grow like pretty exponentially from the concept like of just regular superhero.
That's
stuff.
True. And in that way, it feels more like the Kieran Gillen. Young Avengers kind
yes,
of stuff.
Yes, it
yeah.
does.
Also, they're using their budget very well.
They are.
The effects and sort of just the trappings.
Yeah.
And also, while I think that Whedon shows have always had action, I don't think I've seen action done in the way that they're doing it on the Nevers, because that fight scene in the third episode,
oh,
episode
he's on
the water.
Yeah, that
oh,
was
I was
kind
like,
of so cool.
This is interesting. I think I've seen it in comics or something, but I've never seen it on the screen done in
yeah.
a certain
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that was something new, and I did like that a lot.
I also like Nick Frost, so him being
oh, yeah,
Nick
Frost being the bigger thing,
so
yeah.
good.
It's great, yeah.
And it's really funny because he definitely is like that very Whedon type villain where he's like a scumbag, but like a real likable scumbag.
Uh-huh.
You're
yeah.
like, oh yeah, he definitely just carved that guy up, but he's so charming.
He just likes to say the F word constantly.
Yeah, yeah. It is fun to get to see Nick Frost play this type of character. He usually
That's
plays the slovenly best friend.
Yeah.
Or like sort of like just comedy relief types
yeah,
in general.
Yeah.
And he's very much not comedy
no,
relief.
No, he is. He's, like you say, charming, but he's very bad.
Very horrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is doing, like, viewership or ratings-wise, because
no
HBO Max doesn't say anything.
Right.
And similarly, I also think that, like, Joss Whedon's name being anywhere
yeah.
near this is, like, definitely hurting it, because
yeah.
I think
probably.
That, for example, I think probably I'm kind of the target audience for a show like this, and I know that a lot of people like me, they just sort of look at it and they're like,
yeah,
not gonna
like,
do
no,
nothing
no,
with Joss
you.
Whedon these days.
Yeah.
So thank you.
But people who don't know the backstory of Joss Whedon or
they,
don't connect with that,
yeah.
Like my wife, I mean, she knows because I've told her.
Yeah.
But she didn't know that on the first episode. And she loved it.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, "Oh, this is a really cool idea. These are fun things.
Yeah.
These are great characters."
Like,
exactly.
Oh, well, let me ruin it.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
well, let me ruin a part of it for you.
Yeah. And I had sort of like watched the second episode before. I was like, "Oh wait, that was Joss Whedon's name,
yeah.
wasn't it?"
Yeah. I watched the whole episode. And it's like, wait, but written by, produced by, directed
yeah.
by. I'm like, oh, he's all over this thing.
Well,
yes.
he directed, I think, 3/4 of the season.
Yeah.
The season.
Yeah.
That said, they did already fire him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. No, he quit because he was exhausted.
Oh, sorry, that was what happened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Netflix's other Shadow and Bone, which is a show that it's based on a series of YA novels.
Yes.
That are, there's like, Shadow and Bone is the first of a, like, three-part trilogy.
Right.
And then there's a Something of Crows that's a duology.
Yeah.
And it's like a different timeline.
Oh, wow.
And they sort of mashed it all together into here. And this is sort of, it's fantasy-esque, like it's steampunky fantasy, because they have guns, that kind of thing. It's very Russian in feel, and it's essentially a Russia where this shadow general decades ago or whatever created this shadow zone between the two parts of Russia that you have to cross, and it's filled with monsters.
Yep.
Called the...
The Fold?
From
the
what
fold.
I understand, that is just Russia in real life.
There is a shadow fold over there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, from what I gather about Russia, it is just literally full of shadow generals and monsters. So, like, that is Putin's title officially, right?
And so there's two stories. The main one is about this general who controls the dark force type thing, basically. And there's a great line where they're like, why doesn't he fix it? And they're like, have you ever tried to put a fire out by putting more fire on it? And I'm like, that was a great, like, why does he get this power but he can't fix it? You got one line, that's great.
Yeah.
But it's him, General Kerrigan, I think is his name.
Yeah.
And the lead character, who is a...
Sun...
She's a sun summoner.
Yeah,
sun summoner. Prophesied, if they haven't seen them, she can bring in light and the theories that she'll be able to destroy the fold.
Yeah, I'm going
to
be completely honest. If you gave me a quiz on character names, I would fail.
There's a lot of characters.
I would get a zero.
So that's... She was from an orphanage. She has a childhood friend, Mal, who's a soldier. And it's like... It is very much the YA formula of, like, this girl torn between this handsome general and this handsome childhood friend, and she's the chosen one, and you could map this onto Hunger Games and everything else.
Yeah.
But it's done well.
But then you've got the club owner...
But the crows, the thing from the other book, is the dregs are what they're called.
Oh, okay, they're... Yeah.
And they have he's from another country.
Okay.
And he's like a club owner. He's like, he has a cane. He's got his gunslinger guy
and
who's got anxiety.
The shadow thief.
And they've got this the shadow thief badass.
Yeah.
And they basically they're going to kidnap the sun summoner.
Yep.
And they're in a whole other movie, basically.
Yeah.
And that's the one I'm the most interested in.
Yeah. The main story, I'm like,
fascinating.
Okay.
They're basically running a heist in this fantasy
world. It's a heist within the show. That's neat.
I like it. Mm-hmm. I'm only like 3 or 4 episodes in. I can't remember where I left off.
Yeah.
But I don't remember anybody's name. It just kind of runs across, and I'm like, okay, that person can summon suns. Sure.
I think I binged most of this. I really liked it. It takes a turn about episode 6 where they do some big reveals.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, unfortunately, the main story of, like, the Sun Summoner and the Shadow General and all that stuff is not as... It's fine. I've just seen that story before.
Yeah.
But the heisty stuff, I am in the whole time.
Oh,
like,
cool.
I love those.
I've liked those characters.
Do you like heists, Randy?
I love me a heist.
Okay.
The General is the only actor on this that I know from anywhere.
I don't know any of these people.
You would remember he was
in Westworld,
he was in Westworld.
Oh, okay.
He was the...
Sleazy, hot scumbag man.
Oh,
yes.
That guy.
Yeah, he was fun.
He's good here.
Yeah, he's good there and good here as well.
Yeah.
The world building on this is great. The sort of Russian flavor is really interesting.
Yeah. That is something you rarely see in stuff.
True.
Like Russian steampunk? Like, that's cool as hell.
My only gripe... I mean, I have a few, but my main gripe is that... I'm so tired of British being the stand-in for anything that's not... Like, these should have been more Russian flavored in like they look like they all have names like Mal and they're all Russian named Dubrov and all this kind of stuff.
Oleg
and all that stuff, and yet they all talk and look like British men.
Yeah,
fascinating.
I will say the costuming is really good.
The actual production design is amazing.
I love their hats.
Yeah,
their hats are amazing.
The world building is really good.
Yeah.
The actual story, like the moment of storytelling, is good. I just wish it was a little less British and a little more Russian.
Agreed.
But I really like this, and I'm definitely gonna want to see more of it.
And you also want a little more heist. A
little more heists.
Yeah. So
also, by the way, there's a scene. I feel like it's in like episode 2 or 3. You've seen when they cross the fold.
Yeah.
So the heisty people are crossing the fold. They've got this goat that their guy who crossed them, the conductor, the guy who's bringing them across, and they don't know what the goat is for. And they think they're going to have to sacrifice it or something. It's like some weird sacrifice. And at some point, like, they're being attacked by all these creatures. And he tells the gunslinger, he's like, no, the goat is for you. It's your comfort animal. And this guy picks up the goat to keep him from being anxious and has this badass gunslinger moment.
Oh, that's adorable, actually.
It's great.
It reminds me a little bit of, like, Christopher Nolan's, like, where they have different names for people with talents.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
But, yeah, I thought that gunslinger is my favorite character, and I think they did a great job with him.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But, yeah, it's super fun. Definitely recommended, and I liked it way more than I expected to when I heard it was like a YA thing.
Yeah.
So
I've liked a lot of the YA things, like Divergent and Hunger Games. And really actually enjoyed The Maze Runner. That was a fun trilogy.
I've seen most of that.
It's good.
Okay.
I've seen one of those.
They actually progressively get better, which is a weird thing. Usually they falter.
That is the opposite of how it usually goes.
I did a Patreon episode of our TV podcast where we tried to guess what The Maze Runner was about based only on some of the trailers.
Oh, I like that. That's fun. It's a life.
Pretty sure we got nowhere near it. But,
I don't know. You've watched enough YA and you know like where.
No, I'm pretty sure we got nowhere near it. What we came up with was definitely not commercial. All right.
I will also say, just as a quick aside before Randy cuts off, I really enjoyed the finale of Invincible. I know you did not.
I really did not.
I haven't seen it yet. Don't talk.
I'm not. But I'm just saying, I really enjoyed the entire season. Watch it. I think it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
And then come buy all the Invincible graphic novels, which we have.
It's true.
We're trying to keep
allegedly. They keep disappearing.
Out. Yeah. But yeah. All right, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time, Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.